Isn't it great when you have something to look forward to, like the latest episode of this podcast, or even better, an amazing Italian getaway? Well, Explore Worldwide's new Amalfi Coast Discovery Tour is a slice of heaven. I'll be telling you more about it later in the podcast, but for now, I'll leave you with this. Their big blue sale is now on, and you'll save up to 20% on Explore's most popular small group adventures. Click the link in the episode description or book at exploreworldwide.com.au and don't just travel, explore.
A Listener Production.
I need to be asking these questions. I need to keep pushing forward. Because if I don't, no one else will. And I owe that to my people, to my family, and to, you know, my ancestors before me who, thinking of what they went through in their lives, I may have suffered racism at school, but they had it a million times worse than I did.
Hi, I'm Jess Rowe, and this is the Jess Rowe Big Talk Show, a podcast that skips the small talk and goes big and deep. From love to loss and everything in between, I want to show you a different side of people who seem to have it all together in these raw and honest conversations about the things that matter. Carla Grand is a Western Aranda woman and Walkley Award-winning journalist and presenter. Among her TV hosting roles is Living Black, Australia's longest-running Indigenous current affairs program. Carla has told many compelling stories over her 30 years at SBS, and I wanted to learn more about Carla's own story and what fuels her fight for justice. It was such a privilege for me to have this conversation with Carla, and I can't wait to share it with you. Now, you, Carla, have just celebrated 30 years.
That's right.
At SBS.
Exactly.
What an achievement.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
To be in media for that amount of time.
Yeah.
That in itself is extraordinary, isn't it?
It is. It is, as we both know. You know, it's a hard industry. It's not easy to work in. Being a woman, you've got to work, you know, twice as hard as the men. And being an Indigenous woman as well, that's another sort of, you know, a hurdle, I guess. But I didn't make it a hurdle. It was others that, you know, try to make that sort of, you know, into a hurdle. But I didn't. Obviously, I'm here still 30 years later and still going strong. So, yeah, I love it. I love what I do. I'm very passionate about it.
Why did you want to be a journalist?
Gee, growing up in Adelaide, it was pretty tough. You know, I grew up in the community with my family. My mum and dad separated when I was about 3 years old. So I grew up with my mum, who's Aboriginal. My dad's Dutch. So I grew up around my Aboriginal family and in the community. You know, going to high school there was pretty tough. I faced a lot of racism. So that sort of made me sort of have this strong sense of social justice, I think, to want to, you know, highlight the issues that I saw my own community and family facing. Also, my uncles used to get picked up by the police on a regular basis, just for walking down the street and just for the colour of their skin. So, you know, that was really hard to see and to grow up amongst, and also facing that racism at school made me want to do something about it. So when I sort of got into my teenage years, I thought, what can I do to make a difference? And I thought, I want to be a reporter. I want to be a journalist. And that's how it all started, really.
I'm so sorry that at school you had to deal with racism. Are you able to share a little bit about what that looked like for you?
Yeah, it's really tough as a young person going to school, and I really loved actually going to school, but the part of it that I didn't like was, you know, that I got teased just for being Aboriginal. And, you know, I'd be walking to school or walking home from school and, you know, groups of kids would come up and sort of call me all sorts of names like Bung or Coon, don't go near her, the black might rub off, those sorts of taunts. And it was really hard. And, you know, I didn't really want to go to school after, you know, continually having that, you know, day after day. And it was my mum who said, you've got to go to school. You've got to get an education. And also my grandfather, who was a big inspiration in my life, he would say, girl, you've got to get a good education. He used to put H's in front of the E's and O's. He'd say apples and oranges and education. And so, yeah, they sort of said, you've got to go to school. You've got to get a good education if you want to do something in life. So that gave me the drive to keep on going. But yeah, it was hard being teased on the way to school, going home, also in the classroom. You know, I'd be too frightened to, you know, put my hand up to answer a question or, you know, because I wanted to be invisible, I think. That was my coping mechanism, I think, to just sort of, you know, be quiet, sit at the back, don't make any waves, don't sort of, you know, don't sort of make a noise or anything because I didn't want to be seen or heard because of, you know, if I did, then I'd be racially, you know, taunted.
And that is just an awful, awful thing that you had to go through. It's hard enough being a young person. School can be a really awful place anyway, apart from having to endure that. But that speaks to what an incredible person you are now and continue to be, because from someone who wanted to be invisible, you use your voice and you have for such a long time, Carla.
That's right. Yeah. It's kind of weird, really. That
but it is to
it's
think
strange
from that
to think, yeah,
young,
yeah,
when you put it that way. Girl.
But yeah, I wanted to just be invisible so that I wouldn't be teased. But now I'm in this role where I'm a voice for my people. So, yeah, I think I'm really proud of myself for getting through that. And I've had to have a tough skin and, you know, it has been hard, but I think because I had that strong sense of social justice and wanting to make a difference and wanting to make change in this country, and that's what really drove me to, you know, to do what I do today.
And where, though, did that come from, that drive, in the sense of, you said your mum was adamant that you stayed at school?
Yes.
Your grandfather as well was like, no, you need to stay. But there's a difference between thinking, okay, I'm going to stay, but then to taking that next step to saying, I'm going to use my voice. Where did that sort of gap come from, so to speak, or how did you leap to that?
Yeah, so because they wouldn't allow me to, you know, not go to school, I had to keep on going and I just had to get through that. And then in year 12, I had to think about what I was going to do, whether I was going to apply for university, that sort of thing. So I applied at a few institutions, tertiary institutions in Adelaide, and I also applied for a cadetship at a newspaper there, which will remain nameless, but I'm sure you know which one it is. But I didn't. I went through the interview process for the cadetship and didn't get it. Yeah, that was pretty hard because, yeah, I was a young woman. I was only 17 years old when I finished year 12.
17. Mm. And with that particular cadetship interview you did, you came across a really vile man, didn't you?
That's right. Yeah, yeah. He was an older non-Indigenous man. And there was a woman on the interview panel as well. But he was sort of like, he was talking about me as though I wasn't even in the room. He was saying, oh, she's pretty enough, but will she be able to communicate?
And you're sitting there.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there.
And he's articulating this.
Yeah, and I was 17 years old. I didn't know what to do or say, and I was quite shy back then as well. So I just sat there and listened to it and then, you know, went away hoping, I hope I'm going to get this cadetship. And then, of course, I was unsuccessful. So I got into a nursing course because I also wanted to, I was thinking about being a vet as well. Yeah, and nursing. So I got into that course. My auntie lived in Canberra. So she said to me, why don't you come to Canberra and come to university here? And I didn't tell Mum. She thought I was going to Canberra for a holiday because I used to visit my auntie during the school holidays. So Mum thought, oh, she's just going to, you know, hopping on the Greyhound bus and went to Canberra for the holidays. I applied for university there at the Canberra CAE and I got into the journalism course. So, of course, then I had to tell Mum I'm not coming back. And she was not happy. She was pretty angry with me. Because I, you know, I had a big responsibility at home, looking after my mum, looking after my sister, my younger sister, looking after family members. So it was hard because, yeah, I had to leave all of that behind and go to Canberra and to start this new life there and, you know, living with my auntie who also was a big inspiration and really encouraged me to apply for the journalism course and, yeah, and to be a journalist. She really encouraged me. So I had to sort of say to Mum, sorry, but if, you know, I thought in the back of my mind I had to leave that behind if I wanted to, you know, fulfil my dreams. And so, yeah, that's what happened.
Very brave young woman.
Yeah, I don't really see it that way, but...
Why don't you see it that way?
I don't know. I've never really thought about it. You know, I just thought, yeah, if I wanted to become something to be successful in life, you know, I had to get my education, like Grandpa said, and I knew that if I stayed in Adelaide, that wasn't going to happen because I had all these family responsibilities. And so as hard as it was to leave my little sister, you know, she had a mild intellectual disability, suffered from schizophrenia, and I had to look after her quite a bit. So it was hard leaving her behind and hard leaving Mum because Mum was always, she wasn't well. But if I stayed there, I would be stuck looking after family and I wouldn't be able to fulfil my own dreams. So I just had to do it.
And your beautiful Mum was the one who'd encouraged you to stay at school and to finish your education at school.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. So after a while, she got over it. And, you know, she was quite proud of me that I, you know, was in Canberra. I was going to university. I was doing a radio program as well, community radio. And I was doing all these things that I never thought I'd ever do. So she was very proud of me. And she still is today.
Was there a moment with your studies and then doing that work at the community radio station where you thought, yes, this is what I'm meant to be doing. This is why I'm doing this.
Yeah, yeah. Because with the radio program, I was interviewing different people, high-profile people who would come to Canberra, a lot of Indigenous leaders as well. So speaking to them and seeing what my auntie was doing as well, she worked in equal employment opportunity in the public service. So she was making a difference there in the things that she was doing. And I had a lot of strong women around as well. And yeah, I thought, yeah, I really want to be a journalist and I really want to make a difference. And yeah, so that sort of, all of that experience helped me to keep on going. But of course then I actually had to work in the public service for about 6 years. And I worked with Senator Susan Ryan, who was the first woman to be a minister in the Hawke government. She was very inspirational. She was very encouraging as well. And, yeah, so I spent 6 years in the public service before I actually got a job at a private production company in Canberra. And then that sort of changed my whole life.
So not only are you brave, Carla, you're persistent too. Because it's
it
easy.
Took 6 years.
Yeah, but that, you know, that does take time. That's a lot of time.
Mm.
And you could have then headed off on a different path.
That's
right. But still... storytelling, and I've read too where you're a truth teller, and that's obviously very important to you. So this truth telling meant that you really had to be a journalist. That was your calling, your purpose.
That's right. Yeah. I think even though I spent those 6 years in the public service, I worked on my writing skills. I was still doing the radio program as well. So I was doing other things on the side to, you know, because in the back of my mind, I didn't lose sight of that goal and that dream that I had. So eventually my turn came and, yeah, my opportunity arrived And I was asked to present a program, an Indigenous program, which was made on behalf of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Commission. It was like a monthly video magazine program where they would we'd go out to various communities right around the country and do stories of achievement in the community. So when they asked me to audition for that, I went for the audition. There was a male host and a female host, and the female left. So they were looking to replace her. And I went for the audition and they said, yes, you've got the job. So I was working there part-time, just going in once a month, doing the presenting. But then they asked me to join the company full-time. So that's where I sort of learnt all my, you know, skills in producing and directing and honing my skills in, you know, reporting and interviewing as well. And it was a real eye-opener, a really big eye-opener, because some of the communities that we went to, it was quite distressing, and, you know, some of the things that I'd seen and heard, it really sort of, you know, made an impact on me. So that really gave me even a bigger drive to keep on, you know, doing this work. And it isn't just work for me, it's actually my whole life.
It fired you up even more to share these stories and experiences. Is there a story, Carla, that sits with you more than another?
Yes. I think the story that we did, it was called Taken, and it was about children in out-of-home care. So we interviewed two young girls who had been living in hotel rooms for about 18 months. So they'd been taken away from their mother. Their mother, she actually went to family and community services for help. So she had the two girls, and they had siblings as well. And they were couch surfing. They had nowhere to live. And they took the children away. And that was just devastating, just to hear, you know, what had happened to these girls. They were put into hotel rooms where they had carers coming in on 8-hour shifts. Sometimes they would have to move hotel rooms as well, so they were moving from place to place. They had to continually pack up their belongings. They had all these different people coming in every 8 hours. They used to, sometimes they lost their belongings, like their precious, you know, stuffed toys and things that, you know, they held dear to themselves. So it was just, yeah, I feel really emotional when I speak about it, because what they went through, you know, should never have ever happened. And their mother just went there for help, but they took the children away, and the other little ones, they got taken away as well. And, you know, the girls, when they were recounting what happened, said to me, you know, a police car went to pick up the other children, and they didn't know what was happening. And they just thought, yay, we're going for a ride in a police car, yay. They thought, it was going to be fun, but it wasn't. And their mother has never had the children returned to her at all. And the two girls, yeah, as I said, spent 18 months in and out of hotel rooms until they were fostered out to different families, where they're really thriving now, and they do get to see their mother. But, you know, their lives will never be the same again. So that story has stayed with me, and, yeah, it's something, yeah, every time I speak about it, I just get really emotional.
And it's a story that has happened time and time again to First Nations people.
Yes. People think the Stolen Generations was something that happened, you know, in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, even 60s, and that it was supposed to have ended in the 70s, but it hasn't. It continues on today. And the rates of children in out-of-home care are higher than when Kevin Rudd made the apology to the Stolen Generations in 2008. So it's just getting worse. It's not something that happened in the past. It's still happening today.
And you, as a 13-year-old, you used to lie to the police, didn't you, when they'd come to your front door saying, no, my uncles aren't here, and also that fear of police and welfare.
Yes, I'm still scared of police today. When I see the police on the same street, I'll go the other way. That's just how it's impacted on me, just the trauma that I've carried with me you know, since, yeah, being a little girl, having to lie for my uncles, that one of my uncles had a lot of fines. It was just unpaid fines, traffic fines. So the police would come to our house and I'd have to go to the door and say, no, he's not here. And, you know, he'd be at the back, you know, running in the backyard and hiding in the shed. And, you know, I'll never forget the police. He said to me, oh, you know, don't get smart with me, girly. And, you know, because I said, no, he's not here. So that fear of authority and police and, you know, that sort of stuck with me. And as it does with a lot of First Nations people.
But now, though, you speak truth to power, really, that you stand up to authority and shine a light where there hasn't been a light. And also, as I suppose, a part of that too is how important family is to you. I know you're very close to your daughter. And has she just moved out just recently?
She moved out, oh gosh, a couple of years ago. So yeah, it is pretty recent.
Because she was in her 30s, wasn't she?
She's 38 this year.
So she was still at home in
her 30s, yeah. But I've still got a 31-year-old son at home as well.
Oh, my goodness.
They just never leave. They love me too much.
Oh, that's so beautiful. And I read an interview where you were sharing how with your children, you don't think that they experienced that same level of racism that you had at school.
No, no, they haven't, no. They have experienced racism, but not to the degree that I did when I was at school. And thankfully, I'm glad that they have never had to experience that because I wouldn't wish that upon anyone.
And your daughter's also a journalist.
She is.
She's a truth teller as well. I mean, obviously, I can tell because you brought her up. And so, of course, she's going to lean towards a career in journalism. How alike are the two of you?
I think we're very alike. Yes, we are, because we're very driven, strong women. We want to tell the truth about the history of this nation. We want to highlight the issues that our people face. We just have that within us, that we want to tell stories of our people and we want to carry that through, you know, to the next generation. So I'm really proud of my daughter. She's just a beautiful person inside and out, and you know, I think she's got a long career ahead. She's only really getting started. So, yeah, I think that she can sort of, we can pass over the baton, you know, myself and her dad as well, you know, and we can be really proud that she's going to keep up the work that we've been doing all our lives.
Remember, your next international getaway dream can come true with Explore Worldwide's Big Blue Sail. Their small group adventures allow you to really connect with the culture, not just tick off the sights. Explore Worldwide's expert tour leaders get you closer to the colour of Morocco, the peaceful beauty of Japan, or the hidden gems under the glorious Italian sunshine. And with their Big Blue Sail on now, you'll save up to 20% on Explore's most popular small group adventures. Click the link in the episode description or book at exploreworldwide.com.au and don't just travel, explore.
You mentioned there her dad, who is Stan Grant, and the two of you had three kids together.
That's right.
Being a co-parent, how is that? Because a lot of our listeners are in a similar sort of situation. And what's the key, the secret to that, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's just being there for the children. Yeah, despite what may have happened in the past, you know, that's all water under the bridge. It's about the children. And so that's what we've always kept in mind, that we want the children to have, you know, the best life that they can have. And they have the best of both worlds. They have both of us. So I think that's what the key is to just think about the children and what they need and be there for them.
And in a way too, to be there for each other. I was very moved when I saw all of you at the protest at the ABC in support of Stan Grant and other First Nations journalists.
That's right, yeah. So that was during the referendum year, and he experienced a lot of criticism, vile, racist slurs and everything. It was just, it was awful. And death threats as well. And even one of the boys, his son, Jesse, I think he experienced death threats as well. So it was really hard. So we all sort of joined forces and went to the ABC, and I went there in support of Stan and other First Nations journalists who were telling the truth about the history of this nation. And because of that, we were getting ridiculed and criticised for that. And I really wasn't expecting to be, the spokesperson for our family. I just went there to support my family and other journalists. And I ended up being sort of the family spokesperson, and, you know, Tracy and I spoke, and she said, I think you should speak on behalf of the family. And I was, yeah, it was very overwhelming. But my daughter and I just went to the front and, you know, spoke, and yeah, I'm glad I did.
And what did you say?
I just said that, you know, enough is enough. This has got to stop. This racism has to stop. We are not going to put up with this just for telling the truth. We're, you know, truth tellers, and we're not going to put up with this vile racism. And yeah, so it was just really taking a stand against that.
So here you are standing up, saying all of that from the teenager who wanted to be invisible in the classroom, Carla.
Yes. I can hardly sort of believe that I'm doing these things. Sometimes I sort of take a step back and think, oh, think about when I was that young 13-year-old girl at school, and looking at the things that I'm doing now, and I would never have dreamt of doing what I'm doing. And I think I said that when I won the Walkley Award as well for contribution to journalism. I just never thought that I would be in a room like that, in a space like that.
A room that you have every right to be in.
Sorry. I knew I didn't want to cry.
It's okay to cry.
But yeah, it's very hard because, you know, Aboriginal people don't occupy those spaces. They didn't for a very long time. So, yeah, now we do.
And that's thanks to remarkable women like you.
Mm-hmm. I've been doing it for 30 years now, continually reporting on deaths in custody. Even just recently I reported on the death of Kumanjai White in Alice Springs in a Coles supermarket. You know, he grabbed a couple of chocolate bars, and this is a man with a disability who had cognitive issues as well, and all he did was put a couple of chocolate bars down the front of his pants and was walking out, and the next minute he's being, put in the prone position on the floor in the Coles supermarket with everyone around watching, and he didn't make it out of there alive. So, yeah, when I have to continually report on deaths in custody, children in out-of-home care, kids being locked up in detention as young as 10 years old. It's really sad, and it's really disappointing that this country, in this day and age, we're still, you know, it's been 34, nearly 35 years since the Royal Commission into Black Deaths in Custody, and we've had around 600 deaths since that Royal Commission. And it's getting worse. So what is it going to take in this country to change things? But I see it as my role to keep on highlighting those issues. We need to. I need to be holding government, you know, the government to account. I need to be asking these questions. I need to keep pushing forward. Because if I don't, no one else will. I owe that to my people, to my family, and to, you know, my ancestors before me who, thinking of what they went through in their lives. I may have suffered racism at school, but they had it a million times worse than I did. So if I can, you know, do what I do, then I'm just going to keep on doing it for as long as I have to.
And what do you need to fill your heart, to fill your cup, to keep doing this? What is it that makes your heart sing, Carla?
I love what I do, even though as hard as it is, as I said, reporting on those issues time and time again, it is very traumatic. But I also love the conversations that I have as well with people on my program, Living Black. I do a lot of one-on-one conversations with people who are doing amazing things in their lives, achieving so much, making a huge contribution to this country. And I love that. I love speaking to people and finding out what makes them tick. And you know, that, you know, brings me great joy to do that.
What about away from work? Are there things that you think, yes, this makes me feel whole, or this is my safe place?
You know, I love running. I do, you know, my exercise that makes me feel good. I love spending time with my kids. I think that's the biggest part of my life is my three children, Luana, John and Dylan. Like, they're everything to me. So I don't know what I'd do without them. And, you know, they just make me laugh. And, you know, we do so much together. We're very close. So they're my biggest achievement in life.
And laughter. I think to be able to laugh is so important.
It is. It is. Yeah. And that's the thing with First Nations people, despite all the things that we go through, the challenges that we face, you know, we can still have a laugh at the end of the day. We try to sort of, yeah, blackfellas have this great sense of humour and they're just amazing just how, you know, we've been through so much stuff and we can still laugh at the end of the day.
Just finally, you've turned 60.
Yes, I have.
Tell me if we could just finish with, what is it like to be 60?
It's fun, yeah. I don't really think about it too much. Yeah, I mean, I did think about it, oh, wow, I'm 60. But, yeah, you know, I think, you know, it's just you're as old as you feel. And I feel, you know, I'm energetic and, you know, active. And, yeah, I don't sort of think about my age or let that stop me from doing anything. Yeah, I'm always sort of teasing the kids and I'll say to them, oh, I'm getting old now. And they're like, Mum, stop it. You're not old, you're young. And they'll say, oh, here she goes again. But I'm only just like teasing them. But it's great. It's you know, I'm enjoying life. I love what I do. I love my work. I've got my kids. I've got a, you know, very full life. So, yeah, I'm very happy.
Carla Grant, thank you for sharing some of your story with us. It's been really wonderful to talk with you.
Oh, thank you so much, Jess, for having me.
Thank you.
Thank
you're
you.
You're wonderful.
Thank you.
So what did you take away from that conversation? I took away so much from Carla's bravery, determination. And what about that moment when she shared what it was like to be in the room, a room that she felt she hadn't been ever deserving to be in? But if there is a woman that is deserving, it is Carla Grant. And you can catch Carla's extraordinary work on SBS. Now, while Living Black, it has wrapped for the year, the show will return with fresh episodes on SBS in 2026. In the meantime, you can catch up anytime on SBS On Demand. And if you're looking for more powerful storytelling, Carla Grant Presents showcases a special selection of documentaries and films, each introduced by Carla, and she offers her personal insights and very thoughtful context to deepen your viewing experience Monday nights on NITV. And of course, if you love this chat with Carla, there are so many more incredible conversations waiting for you here on the Jess Rowe Big Talk Show. Hit subscribe, it's free, and it means you'll never ever miss a dose of Big Talk when a new episode lands. Now, do you know someone who would love this episode? I reckon you would. All you need to do is to tap those three little dots and share it with them. It is the easiest way to spread the Big Talk love. And if your besties or workmates aren't already listening, tell them what they are missing and get them on board the Big Talk podcasting show. And if this conversation has left you thinking or feeling something big, which I know it's left with me, I think you will love my chat with Leah Purcell. You'll find a link waiting for you in the show notes.
It would be a crime if I didn't use this opportunity to use my voice and to be that truth teller, because their truths happened. They existed. Those things happened. And now it's about understanding that and then moving forward so we don't repeat those actions. And that's why I proudly wear the title of truth teller. And as you said before, I'm a fierce bitch and I'll walk forward and I'll roll over anybody.
The Jess Rowe Big Talk Show is hosted by me, Jess Rowe. Executive producer, Nick McClure. She's a wonderful leopard lady. Audio imager, Nat Marshall. Until next time, remember to live big. Life is just too crazy and glorious to waste time on the stuff that doesn't matter. Okay, now it is time to explore, because now it's time to tell you a little bit more about Explore Worldwide's new Amalfi Coast Discovery Tour. Imagine lemon groves, little cliffside villages, staying in a family-run hotel where the pasta is definitely better than anything you've made at home. Even better, it can all be yours for less, with up to 20% off in Explore Worldwide's Big Blue Sale on now. Click the link in the episode description or book at exploreworldwide.com.au, and don't just travel, explore.